We were all camped out in a cramped bungalow, two bedrooms and one bathroom for a party of 25.
Brothers and sisters, there's a revolution going on.
Can we make a list?
Transcendence Gospel Choir is no ordinary choir. All of the choir members are transgendered individuals.
This is God's calling for my life, to sing and to minister through song.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Violent homophobes confront Polish rights and remembrance marchers, a religion-rocking trans choir transcends intolerance, and a comical tale of queer hippie communes. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Dean Elzinga.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 8, 2004. Two demonstrations by gay and lesbian activists in Poland were met with violence this week, the same week Poland officially became a member of the gay-supportive European Union. In the southern city of Krakow, a march for equality by some 800 gays and lesbians was the target of eggs, stones, and firecrackers thrown by about 200 counter-demonstrators. Police held off the attackers with tear gas and rubber bullets. No arrests or injuries were reported. The march was the climax of the four-day Culture for Tolerance Festival organized by the national group Campaign Against Homophobia, KPH. The festival KPH called a first for the Pope's former home was intended to present the works of lesbian, gay, and transgender artists to the general population and provide a forum for discussion of the community's place in Polish society. The festival's supporters included two of Poland's Nobel Prize winners and the National Minister for the Equality of Men and Women, but religious right opposition posed many barriers to organizers. When they applied for a permit for the march, they were initially denied their chosen date and instead offered St. Stanislaus Day, an important holiday for Poland's large Roman Catholic majority. The first media reports made this appear to be a choice by KPH to deliberately bait Catholics. The event never recovered from that inflammatory presentation, even though the march was ultimately held on the date KPH wanted and its route was moved out of the main city center. Under pressure from the religious right group, the League of Polish Families, festival venues began to drop out. The distinguished Jagiellonian University moved festival lectures from its central locations to a distant suburb, citing safety concerns. Even the Malopolska regional government body got into the act. It voted 22-4 in support of a declaration proposed by the League that the official opening of the festival in a city cultural site and events promoting homosexuality would be harmful to the Cracovian community and the entire region. The League also circulated a petition against the festival. In another event this week organized by KPH, an international group of about 40 marched with rainbow flags to lay flowers at the Auschwitz concentration camp to commemorate gay victims of the Nazi Holocaust. Although their route had been changed and activities curtailed for security, anti-gay counter-demonstrators clashed violently with Warsaw police and several people were injured.
New Zealand's Labour Party government announced this week that it won't be introducing its civil unions bill until the next session of Parliament. Previously, debate on the bill to create registered partnerships had been expected in mid-May, but now it will be no earlier than July. That's also true for a companion measure, an omnibus bill to amend many existing laws to extend marital benefits to unmarried domestic partners, including gays and lesbians. The government cited the technical difficulties involved in developing the omnibus measure and the need for Parliament to focus on the budget this month. The government spokesperson denied speculation that politics motivated the delay, particularly recent polls finding weak support for civil unions. Some pundits predicted the government might abandon the bills altogether.
A lesbian couple this week became the first in Scotland to officially register their relationship. Their commitment ceremony was certified by a clerk in the town of Alloa in County Clackmannanshire, so far the only county in Scotland to approve such registry. The certification has no legal standing, although Scotland is expected to adopt the legal partnerships now under consideration in the British Parliament.
Taiwan's first openly gay minister was formally ordained this week by four ministers of the Presbyterian Church in Taiwan, or PCT. Pastor Zhang has already served for more than 5 years in the pulpit of the gay-accepting Tong Kwang Lighthouse Presbyterian Church, which is independent of the PCT. That small congregation in Taipei keeps a low profile out of fear of harassment. So the ordination ceremony was held at a larger, more mainstream PCT church building. Many religious and human rights leaders attended, as well as a member of parliament. A PCT spokesperson interviewed by Taiwan Church News stressed the independence of the Tong Kwang Church from the PCT organization, describing PCT ministers' participation and the rental of the PCT church building as courtesies. But he confirmed that while there is no official policy on homosexuality, the PCT believes gays and lesbians merit the same love and pastoral care as others.
The Hungarian Reformed Church Synod this week issued a statement opposing both ordination and same-gender marriage. A bishop made a public statement on behalf of the synod, describing a lasting relationship between people of the same sex as a sin equal to adultery. He said that because the church finds such relationships unacceptable, that what he called this kind of lifestyle or the promotion of it is incompatible with serving as a pastor or even a religious educator. The synod called on Hungarians to protest any legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples or adoption rights for them on the grounds those would damage the interests of marriage and the family.
But conservatives in the Anglican Church of England appeared to have failed in their efforts to block the appointment of openly celibate gay Geoffrey John as dean of St. Albans Cathedral. His previous appointment to become Bishop of Reading caused such an outcry that he withdrew for the sake of church unity. But this week, the cathedral not only issued a statement of wholehearted support for John's appointment by its clergy and the vast majority of its congregation, it brought his installation ceremony 3 months closer by changing the date from October to July.
However, some of their Anglican counterparts in the U.S., the Episcopalians, stripped a retired bishop of his license and status for marrying his partner in a church ceremony. Ministers involved in it may also be disciplined. Former Bishop of Utah Otis Charles publicly identified himself as a gay man only after his retirement a decade ago at the age of 67, but he's been an advocate for equality ever since. Now a resident of San Francisco, it was there he married his partner of 2 years, Felipe Sanchez Perez, last month. The disciplinary action was determined by Bishop of California William Swing, himself an advocate for church blessings of same-gender couples. But while the Episcopal Church USA has opened the door for bishops to allow those blessings, the policy is that the ceremonies may not resemble marriages.
A non-gay minister of the Presbyterian Church USA has won his appeal of a conviction for marrying gay and lesbian couples. Reverend Stephen Van Kuyken had been the first minister ever tried by the PCUSA on that charge, and a church court had found him guilty and rebuked him. This week, a higher church court voted 6-4 to reverse the conviction and dismiss the rebuke. It found that the church's constitution does not actually prohibit a minister from marrying a same-gender couple, and that it is not an offense subject to discipline. The deep split on the appeals panel hinged on the use of the words should and should not, as opposed to what the majority would have viewed as an outright prohibition. Although relieved, Van Kuyken said he's still resigning from the PCUSA. He'll continue to lead a non-denominational congregation composed of those who followed him when he was dismissed from his former church.
Another major U.S. denomination, the United Methodist Church, ended its quadrennial National General Conference this week just as divided on gay and lesbian issues as it's been for the last 3 decades. There were sizable demonstrations both inside and outside the meeting in support of equal treatment for gays and lesbians, but 60% of delegates supported a resolution reaffirming that the United Methodist Church does not condone the practice of homosexuality and considers this practice incompatible with Christian teaching. With a 55% majority, they rejected a move by liberals to soften that stance with a statement that, "We recognize that Christians disagree on the compatibility of homosexual practice with Christian teaching."
UMC's highest court, the Judicial Council, also sat during the General Conference and considered the denomination's position on ordination. Recently openly partnered lesbian Reverend Karen Damon was acquitted by a church court in Seattle, Washington, and allowed to continue her ministry. The Judicial Council decided it lacked authority to reverse that already made decision. But the council, in a 5-4 decision, laid down the law for the future that so-called self-avowed practicing homosexuals may not hold any appointment in the church.
The surprise of the General Conference came near its end when some conservatives actually suggested that the denomination formally split up because of its differences on gay and lesbian issues. More than 95% of delegates voted for a resolution that the UMC continue in unity, but the dissidents intend to continue their campaign for an amicable separation.
And finally, Austin, Texas's Gay and Lesbian Tavern Guild's twice-yearly Splash Day more than lived up to its name this week. The festivities included a boat ride on Lake Travis, but the barge capsized, dumping all of its passengers overboard into water some 40 feet deep. While about 6 needed help, all reached shore safely, with only 2 suffering minor injuries. The boat was tied up at the time it tipped over, but tilted when all of the passengers moved at once to the railing on one side. By no coincidence, that was the side overlooking Hippie Hollow, the state's only public nude beach.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 8th, 2004. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Dean Elzinga.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Musicians on a mission to transform the world reclaim their spiritual calling later in the program. Some people attempt to prove their psychedelic era exploits with button or poster collections, but maybe a better test of your credentials is whether you can stand to attend a meeting of any kind. Gay writer, director, performer Donald Curry brings the age of the commune back to life in these edited for radio excerpts from It Was At This Time, from his movie Made of Sound, Sex and Mayhem, Part 2.
It was at this time of mass hallucination that a group of us who had been germinating a creative tribe out at the ranch in our day-long, then week-long creative frenzies, finally decided to become a family. To live together and cook up history-making theater, because, as far as we were concerned, history, that old bunk perpetrated by passé squares, had been ripped apart. And into the chasm of interrupted time, we leapt lemming-like and naked, like fools to their folly. Before we knew what we were doing, we were all camped out in a cramped bungalow, 2 bedrooms and 1 bathroom for a party of 25. And what could we do after rousing ourselves from sleep and getting through the toilet clamor than to have a meeting about it all? This was the beginning of an endless series of gab fests masquerading as work sessions to try and bring some order into a hopeless situation of overcrowding, bad hygiene, drug hangovers, and serious lack of sleep. But we were young. The world was ready to be remade in our image of grace and unwashed resplendence. And so we convened the meeting, and it lasted 5 years. And in the course of time, we did move into more spacious digs, from the impossibly overstuffed circus car bungalow to a rundown farmhouse north of San Francisco, where we even considered moving into some abandoned chicken coops when the farmhouse lease ran out. But just in the nick of time, we were saved from this hideous fate when someone in the group found a large and impressive 13-bedroom mansion in San Francisco for $1,000 a month, which we thought was pretty expensive, man. But we hauled our hippie asses in there anyway and had a rather difficult time coming up with the rent each month as we were busy talking and changing the world. One thing you can say about my generation is that it knew how to talk and talk and talk and still get nothing done. You can't imagine the tedium of these conclaves, where the loudest and most fervent held forth on the correct revolutionary way to take out the garbage, which meanwhile sat and rotted, as did we.
Brothers and sisters, there's a revolution going on.
Can we make a list? Does anybody have paper?
Focus, focus.
Can I say something, please?
This is bourgeois counter-revolutionary garbage.
Who made that dinner tonight? That was weird, man. Somebody put blue food coloring in the rice.
Don't patronize me or offer them. I'm not your old lady.
As Aleister Crowley said, do unto others as...
Mao said. No, it was Che. He said...
Is it a revolution or is it a dinner party? Make up your mind, comrades, because as Dylan said, which side is your bread buttered on? Both sides?
Now, we want a revolution, and this shit with schedules is just more fascist crap, man.
I hate my room. It's not fair. All the couples are pulling rank and getting the good rooms with views and adjoining bathrooms.
I'm feeling a real hostility here. I'm sensing seriously bad vibes. I think we need to have statements. We need to go around the group and say what's really on our minds to break through the bullshit. So I'll start.
And so on. Ad nauseam. But besides sitting around jawboning while passing the bong, we actually put on some theater. And I guess some of it wasn't too embarrassing.
That was an excerpt from Donald Curry's bio audiobook, Sex and Mayhem Part 2, produced and engineered by Jason Gorski. Sex and Mayhem Parts 1 and 2 CDs are available online at cdbaby.com/Donald Curry, and that's C-U-R-R-I-E.
Hi, my name is Billy Bean, and I was a Major League Baseball player from 1986 to 1995. I started with the Detroit Tigers. I played for the Los Angeles Dodgers and the San Diego Padres. I am gay, and you're listening to a show that hits it out of the park every week. This Way Out Radio Magazine.
Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you.
To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain,
or for audio cassette subscription information,
please visit our website at thiswayout.org,
email us at tworadio@aol.com,
or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA.
Thanks to AlternaBid and the Stonewall Society, you can still bid on some terrific items in an online auction to benefit This Way Out.
Look for the This Way Out auction area at AlternaBid.com. Like what the Bible says about the supposedly foolish things of the world confounding the wise, the vocation of a unique group of San Francisco vocalists is to confound the religious world. Between excerpts from their performances, This Way Out correspondent Kathy Sanchez profiles several members of the Transcendence Gospel Choir, whose album just received two prestigious Out Music Award nominations. The choir's mission statement proclaims, "We endeavor to demonstrate that the preconceived notion of a bipolar, heterosexual, heterogendered natural order is not reflected in the nature of God or the ministry of Jesus Christ."
We love to sing your praises. A song that just says Jesus is all, and he's there for you in good times and in bad, high or low, in your ugly days, in your good days, he's always there, and he loves you just the same. And that's why I need to say Jesus is all.
Jesus is all.
After straying from the church he was raised in, Ashley Moore felt it was time to come back, but this time with a mission. Ashley had a calling. She felt a deep spirituality within herself and other transgender individuals, but also saw that rejection of the transgender community by various churches left little to no alternatives for a spiritual outlet. So she helped create one. Transcendence Gospel Choir is no ordinary choir. The lyrics sung take on a deeper meaning. The energy the choir gives off is tangible. The audience is often moved to their feet almost instantly, and all of the choir members are transgendered individuals. The choir started out with a small membership of 6 in March of 2001, and co-founder and conductor Yvonne Evans says the first few months were tough.
Well, believe it or not, I wasn't sure, and usually when I do something, I have to hear from the Lord. And it took a while, believe it or not. It took at least 2 months because I wanted to give up. When we started singing, you know, it's like, oh, God, no, this is not going to work.
Our first few rehearsals were pretty rough.
They were real rough. And I says, Lord, I can't do this. And there were things that were happening, and it really took a while to get them to really be on key, on note and stuff. And one day, 3 o'clock in the morning, God woke me up and said, I want you to do this, because I was giving up. I called Ashley. I was ready to tell Ashley in the choir that I'm not going to do this. I can't do it. It was too stressful. And when God told me that I was going to do it, right then, things started looking up, and the choir started sounding good, and more people were coming, you know.
Yvonne has a wealth of background in gospel music, beginning at the young age of 4 in her hometown of Chicago. Ashley, on the other hand, did not. But she says after learning more about the history of gospel music, she sees the ties to the transgender community.
I've learned a lot about gospel since we started this thing. And there's such a deep and rich history of freedom singing in gospel music, of being able to say and address those things that you can't otherwise say, that of being able to reach inside and touch the human part of somebody, or the spirit, through the spirit, touch other people in ways that you can't, that they won't listen to you while you're talking, but you can move their spirit and get them to connect with your humanness. And the freedom struggles and you know, we will shall overcome, and all that history comes with it. And so I think that's it's an interesting parallel for us to be picking up and singing about freedom, about wholeness, and about being children of God first and foremost.
Ashley says the response to the choir has been tremendous. There are stories of audience members coming up to the choir after a performance in tears, a profound revelation of spirituality. Choir members speak of planting a seed in the audience and how God has touched each person there. And the choir has performed enough to know. In 3 years, they've performed at Pride events, conferences, ordinations, grand openings, film festivals, and other community events, not just in their home of San Francisco, but around the United States and in Canada. They have an album out that has received praise in many gospel circles, and there is a documentary about the choir that's in the making. All of this for the messages of love and inclusiveness. That's what's recounted over and over in the songs and in their stories. And that's also what draws people to performances and to be among the members of the choir. Jamie Armstrong recalls her calling to the choir.
To me, this is God's calling for my life, you know, to sing and to minister through song to a diverse community. You know, I love God. I love my community. But I know we need love and understanding in order to become a whole world and not just a piece of it. We reach out to the community. We go into shelters, to men, women that are homeless, that are addicted on drugs, that have mental issues. And we minister the word once a year during Christmas time when nobody thinks nobody loves them. And that's what it's about. God is all love. He's ultimate love. It's not about how much you got, what color you are, or what gender you are. It's all about love and offering somebody else some type of hope. You know, and that's what this choir brings. Hope and love to spirits throughout the world.
For Angel Hannah, joining the choir was not only spiritual, but also a coming to terms with his transition.
I just joined like maybe a year ago, but I followed him around. I was a little, I was their groupie, and it got so that, you know, I was selling CDs for him. I was like, okay, I'll hold the CD station down, and y'all go on to sing, And I had wanted to, but it's something about being public, about being trans, and that's what the choir, you know, and that's what it meant. It meant to join the choir. I mean that I had to, not admit to myself, but all, you know, but on a wider scale, admit that I was trans, and to be proud about that, and to not only be proud about it, but to talk about it in connection with my spiritual belief and my belief in God, and when I got over all of those hang-ups that I had around it, you know, I decided to join. You know, we have some rough times, but, you know, I really realized that it's all about growing. Yes. It's all about growth. Right. And, you know, and that's what's happened for me. There's a lot of growth in all departments, You know, spirituality, about being out, about, you know, living my life as a man.
For Yosenio Lewis, being in the choir was an affirmation of living outside of the constructs of society's gender system.
To be able to go to a place where not only was I embraced for my voice, for the talents that I have and the talents that I will learn to have. But I was also allowed to sing in my natural voice and not be told, that's too low for a girl. You need to sing higher. And if you want us to respect you, if you want us to acknowledge you, you have to sing in the range that we believe is what a girl should sing in. To finally be allowed to be who I am and to speak and to sing in the vocal range that is appropriate for me was an incredible blessing. And that's why I'm saying that I felt duty-bound to do this, that it was not just a reclamation for me of my spirituality, but it was also an acknowledgement that I am a transsexual. I have a different kind of voice, and that voice has as much right to be heard as any other voice. You know, this is not a new voice for me. To be told when I was a teenager, your voice is too low, we don't know where to put you, you'll throw us off. And to move to a space now where I'm told, not only do you have a place, but we need that voice. We need that voice to balance us. Mm-hmm. It's an incredible gift to me. Another affirmation of who I am and where I need to be in my world.
The choir is 3 years old and 18 members strong. With the CD out and dozens of performances under their belt, they feel they can only get stronger. You can find out more about their upcoming performances and how to buy their CD on their website at www.tgchoir.org. I'm Kathy Sanchez.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Dean Elzinga, Graham Underhill, Fensbury, Rex Walkner, and Kathy Sanchez contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on planetout.com. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by grants from Clarissa Pinkola Estes, La Sociedad de Guadalupe Foundation, and the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. You too can help keep this program on the air and get some queer audio history, music, and culture CDs in return. For all the details, please log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks very much for listening on WYEP Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, KFAI Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, 4NAG Yeppoon, Queensland, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. We're going to all stay tuned.